talking about too.
Those guys.
Thank you. Okay, it's not that formal. We all have our socks on and our shoes squishing, you know. So this is very casual. Good evening and welcome. My name is Jerry Redd, and this is my business partner, Donna Bracey. And we are the co-owners of PREP, or the Primary Readiness Enrichment Program. And just very quickly, to give you an overview of who PREP is or who we are. We are Chicago's only comprehensive program designed to help you and your child prepare for and navigate the admissions and testing process for both public and private schools in the city of Chicago. Just a quick background. I'm a mother of two children. I have an 8-year-old and a 7-year-old. I've been through the process a couple of times, and I reside in the south side of Chicago. My children go to a Chicago public school, a magnet school in the Hyde Park community, and I'll let Donna give you kind of her background, but what you will know is that we developed this business out of our frustration and challenges in navigating and working through the process. So I say that to say we were once in your shoes, in your seats, and kind of understand what you're going through. So that's sort of why we're here and the purpose of our business, really.
So similar to Jerry, I have one daughter. I went through the process twice. My daughter tested, I thought she tested well and got admitted to no schools, no magnet schools, no selective enrollment schools. So I ended up doing the process again, and in doing it twice, I pretty much stalked CPS's website and learned just about everything there was to know about the process, the loopholes, kind of what to do, what not to do. So when we joined together, you know, we said, this is ridiculous that this information isn't readily available, that you literally have to take on a part-time job of trying to comb through the website just to understand what you're supposed to do. So that's really kind of how we got started.
So I talked about the fact that we are this program designed to help you navigate the process. So we do this in a couple of ways. We provide private customized sessions to help parents understand the types of programs offered, the process of obtaining admission, how to effectively evaluate your options, and how to prepare your child for the process. In addition, we provide a 12-week group session as well as customized private sessions where we work with students to help them prepare for the entrance exams for the public and private schools. We also help your child develop their reasoning abilities, kind of develop their basic skills, and, you know, deal with stranger anxiety, which is a huge thing and that is a huge part of this whole testing process, getting your kids over that initial hump of talking to a stranger.
Okay, so we're just going to jump right in. Actually, before we do that, can I get a show of hands of people who have either gone through the CPS process or are currently going through the process right now?
Okay.
Okay, so kind of half and half. So, like, we're going to just jump right into the criteria for acceptance, just so you guys have a background of understanding of, you know, how they make decisions. For selective enrollment for the gifted schools, in general, there's a gifted test, and the lowest score to be considered, quote-unquote, gifted is 115. We haven't seen typically students who score 115 who've actually gotten admitted to regional gifted centers with the score, just because those test scores go kind of from the top down. So there is no cutoff scores or admissions criteria. It's just based on the number of seats that are available. For classical schools, the lowest score that's generally considered is around a 90% in at least one area. We have seen where students have scored lower than a 90%, maybe in math, but their reading is very strong. For the magnet and neighborhood schools, those are lottery based, and sibling preference is one of the criteria that they use for determining which lottery you are a part of. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the tier system. That's, you know, kind of that one scary thing about CPS that no one quite understands. 2 years ago, CPS desegregated. The school decisions were based on race. There was a court order that said you can no longer base things on race, so they came up with a tier system. And I'll go into exactly what the criteria for the tier system is or how they come up with it. But for selective enrollment, they base it on your zip code in the city. So every person is in a census tract. You know, when they do the census, you have a census tract number. That's the beginning of the criteria that CPS uses to determine your tier. In terms of acceptance, 70% of the seats are filled based on tier, and it's split equally across the four tiers, and 30% of the seats are filled by score ranking. So, for example, if you had 100 seats in a school, the first 30 children would be placed strictly based on their test score. So they go from the top 99.99999%, and they work their way down till they get those first 30 seats filled. Those remaining 70 seats are split equally into four for the four tiers. So what they do is they take the next score and they say, okay, John wants to go to Skinner North. Is there a seat available? Yes, there is. Okay, he can go here, and then that first seat is filled up for that particular tier. They continue that process until they have all of the seats that are available, in this case 100, filled up in all four tiers. I'll go through that in a second. The tier is based on six criteria, but it is based on the location in the city, based on your zip code, exactly where you live. For the magnet and neighborhood schools, the siblings are admitted first. So again, if there are 100 seats available, they go through and they say, okay, we have 50 siblings. They place those 50 siblings, then from there, there's a proximity lottery, which is 40% of the next available seats. Then from there, the general lottery, which is a lottery that's open up to everyone. The proximity lottery is based on your address being 1.5 miles away from the school. So, go ahead. Mm-hmm. No. What happens, and we'll go through that as well later, you get a wait list number. And your wait list, it will tell you proximity and then give you a number. So you still stay in that proximity lottery, and that's what your wait list number is according to.
Within 1.5 miles, let's just say I get in my neighbor's address.
It's luck of the draw. If your name, it's a lottery.
It's a lottery. I'm sorry. We can probably put that in an e-guide.
At the end, what we do is there's some information that we will provide to you, and we send an e-guide out. So you'll get an electronic version of some of the, some of the things we discuss. We have some great tips and tools that we'll send out, and so you'll get some of this information as well.
So make sure that you sign up at the front with your email address, and we'll send it out for, based on that list. No, it's
if it is your neighborhood school, so there. I'm sorry. Oh no. So you're guaranteed in Chicago. There's one guarantee: your child can go to your neighborhood school. Now the school down the block might not be your neighborhood school. It could be a magnet school, and that school is not obligated to take you. But there is a school within your community that you're assigned to that your child can walk in on the first day of school and has a seat automatically. If they don't have one, they have to make one for you. That's the only guarantee. Everything else is up to chance or testing. Yes.
Do you know if it's a magnet school or?
Fresca.
Yes. So that's considered a magnet cluster school, which is, I don't know why that it's not. It's not a magnet cluster?
It has a JP program.
Okay. Okay.
It's not considered magnet cluster, and it's a strange name because it's really not, like, it doesn't operate necessarily like the lottery magnet, but because it has a specialization, they call it a magnet cluster. So there are language specializations in some schools. There's the fine art specializations within, like, a neighborhood school. But they call them magnet clusters.
So, it's a neighborhood school, so they take all of the neighborhood kids. What they do every year, they say, historically, we've had, 60 students who are going to enter into kindergarten. And they take that number, and let's say they have 100 spots. So after they filled in their mind those 60 spots, they'll call CPS and say, can we get our lottery list? So every school, a neighborhood school or a magnet school, you enter into a lottery, and you get a number, basically, for that neighborhood school. So then what the school does is they start from one and go down, and they may fill those remaining 40 seats based on the fact that they know historically that they have 60, students who will come in just from the neighborhood. So it's another lottery. It's just a different lottery. But it's not the magnet process. We have no clue why CPS called it magnet cluster because it just confuses everybody. But it's a neighborhood school. They just have they have extra funding to have a focus in one particular area.
So there's no specific admissions into that focus. Once you get into that school, you have the ability to participate in that program. We have another. Sure, we can do that. So let's start with we talked about the neighborhood school. So that's just your school that everybody, like I said, everybody has a seat in. And there are a wide variety of neighborhood schools. There are some that are very, very strong. There are some that aren't so great. You are guaranteed a spot. Everybody, you can go onto the CPS website, and I don't have the exact site, but we'll send that in our e-guide where you can put in your address, and it will tell you your neighborhood school.
And you only have one.
You have one. And it might not be the one across the street. So you need to look it up to be sure. Then we have what we call our magnet schools. These are lottery-based schools that generally have a specialization. So my children go to a language academy. So they start in kindergarten taking one of four languages, French, Spanish, Mandarin, Japanese. There are fine arts academies. There are STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math academies. These schools offer these specializations. They have special programs, but they are lottery-based, which means that you apply, you put your name in a hat, and if they pull your name out of the hat, then you get in. They do not have any type of accelerated curriculum. Some of them, again, are stronger than others. They tend to be stronger schools, but there is no accelerated education or program within those schools.
And there's no testing.
To
get into those schools.
Right.
Your selective enrollment schools are all of the schools that you have to test to get into. So those are your classical and your gifted schools. Gifted schools, regional gifted centers are what they're called, RGCs. Your classical schools have a skill-based test the students take in the fall, and they work 1 year ahead in terms of their curriculum. RGCs have an IQ type-based test for admittance, and they work 2 years generally. It kind of varies school by school, but generally 2 years ahead in their curriculum. It does. We don't know what
it's a mystery test. They don't tell you. It's not publicized. It's heavily guarded.
Exactly.
We do know that it is not a full-blown test because the test is around 20 minutes. So we don't know if it's one test. We don't know if they've combined a couple of different tests together. But because they are not using psychologists to give the test, which the OLSET, you have to actually be a psychologist in order to give that test, we know it's not a full-blown standard test like the OLSET. Kind of going back into that, for gifted schools, the top score that they've ever seen supposedly is a 160. So that's kind of their ceiling. They say that there is no ceiling, but they haven't seen scores above a 160. So typically, you know, you start seeing, that's where your top schools, you're going to get kids, 159, 158, and they kind of go down from there. For classical schools, they use a percentile score in order to determine entrance. And that top score is, like a 99.99%, and it goes down from there. Again, at your top schools, I think Skinner North, they're 99, 98. They may dip into a 97 for admittance. And again, it's pretty much a popularity contest. So the more popular schools have the higher test scores. Sibling preference. We kind of talked about that. The sibling lottery, if there are enough spots for all of the siblings to get into the school, then every sibling will be admitted. If there are more siblings than there are spots, then there is a sibling lottery. And again, the way that they do that is the sibling lottery, they pick the names first, then a proximity lottery, then your general lottery. Okay.
And just for those of you who may have multiples, I know this always comes up, they do have a policy now where you can link your applications together. So if, let's say, you have twins, in our case, in our school, we have triplets, and you put them all in one, you can link the applications together. So if they apply to our school, if one name gets pulled, that means they're all pulled. So that's new, because typically or historically, one child's name could get pulled and the other one might not. And so there was no kind of twin policy. So you're kind of stuck trying to find a school where you can get both of your children, or, it was difficult. So this is nice. This makes it a lot better for those families who have multiple children. So, yes.
All grades, actually. In order to get into a selective enrollment school, you have to test in. So most times it's in kindergarten, if that's the entry year. But you can test every single year to gain admission into a selective enrollment school.
And once you're in, you're in. There's no more testing.
Is that test particular to one school, or is there one test for all of them?
There's one test for the regional gifted centers, and there's one test for the classical schools. But it's all taken at the same, at approximately the same time. For kindergarten, it's all taken at the same time. Once you get past kindergarten, You get two test times or test dates where the test is on two different days. Go ahead. Well, you'd be eligible for the proximity lottery for the magnet portion of Skinner West. But so Skinner West has a magnet portion as well as a classical school. So this classical school, you still have to test to get into, but you would be in a proximity lottery for the magnet part of it. I know, very confusing, right?
I had a question there. It's just for it's for the kindergarten entry. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they were considering it, but they didn't adopt the policy. They were talking about it last year, but they didn't adopt it. It's just for the entry years. So it depends on the school. So if the entry year is kindergarten, then it's for kindergarten. If it's first grade, it's first grade.
We had one here and one here. Go ahead.
It's a combination. They do it all at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And it depends on what schools you apply for. So when you send your application, you pick your school, classical or gifted schools. If you don't pick any gifted schools, then they won't administer the gifted test. They'll just give you the classical test and vice versa. Okay, we're going to take maybe one or two more questions, and we may answer some of them as we go through. So I'll take – go ahead.
And this is all in theory. I mean, because it really varies from school to school. But the thinking is the classical schools are a more liberal arts type based education. So they stress literacy, they stress mathematics and science. They have a more traditional learning environment. The regional gifted centers are more for creative thinkers. So their curriculum is more experiential learning, kind of more for that creative thinker. Now, that widely varies from school to school. I mean, just because a school says that they're a gifted center, they may be a very classical type school. So you really have to go to the school and kind of take a look at the curriculum and what they're doing to determine if that's actually the case. Okay, so we're going to talk about the criteria for the tier selection. And this isn't like per family. They look at an area. So they look at the medium family income, the number of adults, how their educational background, if they've completed college, the percentage of single-parent households, the percentage of owner-occupied households, the percentage of school-aged children where English is a second language. And they look at the achievement scores from the attendance area in each track. So it's a whole lot of stuff that gets put into this tier system. You know, supposedly this was to try to create diversity in Chicago without using race. It was supposed to impact the admissions of schools. So basically you wouldn't have one school that was populated by a certain body of either income or educational background to just create more diversity throughout all of the schools in the city. and it's small. We'll include this. This is a map of the census tract. So tier four is the most affluent tier, the one that, you know, people are, you know, going to school, have the most education, all the way down to the red, which is tier one. So you can kind of look at it and see where the tiers fall. But if you go on to, we'll have this information in the e-guide, you can actually, it's kind of a multi-step process. You can put in your address, it'll tell you your census number, then you take that data and put it in to determine where, what tier that you fall into. So that's one of those, it is what it is, you really can't do too much about it. What I'll send you to is the link that shows you exactly how to do it. It's a, like I said, it's a multi-step process. So just be prepared. part of it is, but in order to get like your census number, you have to go to a separate website, and then you take that number and take it back to CPS. Of course, it's convoluted.
It's CPS. Right. So the acceptance process, and I know some of you, I saw the hands up that you all are going through this, so a lot of this is going to sound familiar. We'll talk you through it. You're going to see the letters, and these are the letters that everybody's buzzing about, and then there's this wait list that people are buzzing about also. So basically, with the selective enrollment schools, your acceptance letters are going to list the schools that you're accepted to, and they're going to indicate the non-acceptance to the schools that you applied to. So it'll say who you got in and indicate where you didn't, basically.
Actually, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
That's a correction. It will indicate what schools that you got what school you got into. So let's say, for instance, you applied to three selective enrollment schools, and your child got into one. It will say your child attained admission at Skinner North. It won't list the schools, actually won't list the schools that you didn't attain admissions to. And it will say, if you didn't, your child did not gain admittance to any schools. And for selective enrollment, that's pretty much all that letter says.
Yes. Now, the magnet and neighborhood schools, your letter will either say, it'll list the schools that you applied to, and it'll say you were accepted or you weren't accepted. I mean, in this case, you could have got accepted to multiple schools, or you could get accepted to none of them. So it all depends, but it'll all show up on your letter. And then if you did not get in, then you will indicate that you've been waitlisted and what your waitlist number is. Sometimes usually you get that number. If you don't, then you can contact them and find out what your waitlist number is. So if you've applied to both types of schools, selective enrollment, as well as your magnet or neighborhood schools, you should receive two letters from CPS. So you should get the one letter that lists your magnet schools that you did or didn't get into, and then your selective enrollment results. If, in fact, you did not receive both letters, or the letters you should have received, because they did go out towards the end of March, then you should contact CPS immediately to find out what happened. And then you can call and find out what your waitlist number is. But it's not, for the selective enrollment schools, it's a tough process. Donna can...
Yeah, for selective enrollment schools, it's kind of a convoluted process for them. So in any other process, first round, they go through, and we kind of talked about how they go from the top down. For the selective enrollment, they continue that process. For the magnet and neighborhood schools, once first rounds are done, they send those letters to the schools, and then the school takes over that process. But because CPS keeps the selective enrollment process at their central office, it's kind of a combination of tier and a whole, you know, so it's not like you can be number four on a list. It really is based on tier and who didn't accept a position. So if someone from tier three did not accept a position, then someone from tier three will fill it. So they can't really give you, here's your number. So it's a little weird. You can try. Some people have gotten successful at CPS saying, well, you're kind of close. You know, there are a couple of people ahead of you. They're not going to give you a number. But they may shed some light. They've actually been very helpful this year, which we were a little surprised about. We've had some parents who are in our student sessions who had some mix-ups with their magnet schools. All of the schools that they applied to were not listed on their letter. So they called and inquired about them, and CPS sent out additional letters saying what, you know, number, wait list numbers they were for the schools that weren't on their list. Like within a day, shocked, like absolutely shocked. And we had another issue with a child who sent in all of their information for a selective enrollment school, and the school called and said, hey, you haven't been admitted. And, you know, the parent just completely freaked out. And we were able to call and, hey, what's going on? And actually it was a mix-up at the school. CPS actually called the school, verified the information, called them back within an hour, shocking, and straightened everything out. So, again, you guys might want to take the number down. It's 312-553-2060. And like I said, they've been extremely helpful. This is the Office of Access and Enrollment that handles all of the non-neighborhood school admissions. 553-2060.
So this would be just for the selective enrollment across schools, right?
For the magnet, no, for the magnet schools as well. For magnet and neighborhood schools that are not your neighborhood school. So the school that you're not automatically you automatically get admission to. So if you apply to another neighborhood school, that's still the office that you call.
So don't call the magnet school itself if you're on the wait list. Ask where you are on that wait list at that point.
After first rounds, yes, you can call the school directly. But if you have a problem with the process and how things were done, like you didn't, you know, all of your schools didn't appear on your list, or you don't know what your waitlist number is, then you need to call CPS directly. If you're just inquiring about, hey, what's my waitlist number, now you can definitely call the school.
Yes.
Yeah, you. How many schools can you apply for?
For the magnet schools and neighborhood schools, it's up to 20.
Right.
So it's a pretty big list.
No. And for selective enrollment, it's 6.
And then one thing to know about the process is they're handled separately at a point. So once you've gone through the selective enrollment process, the magnet process, and let's say you hit the list for the magnet schools or neighborhood schools and you've gotten accepted or you haven't gotten accepted. So you could literally be accepted to both selective enrollment schools as well as to the magnet schools. Now, you can kind of sit there and know that you've gotten acceptance in these while you're making your decision, because they're sort of handled independently. Once you step in and accept a position and go and enroll your child in the school, then you kind of get pulled out of the hat, out of the box. So I think we talk about it a little bit later, but in terms of, let's say your first choice for the selective enrollment school was not the school that you were picked for. You could make the decision to say, I don't want to do that right now. Put my name back in the hat, and they'll throw you back in the mix. And then when they go back through on that next round, you might get picked for that school, or you may not get picked for any school. So it's a chance you would take. But the nice thing to know is that if you've done both, let's say you've applied to both the magnet schools and the neighborhood schools, and you've gotten picked for maybe one of those, then you can kind of know that you've got this in, what, bird in the hand, you know, and you can still kind of go back into that process. Hopefully I didn't confuse you all with that. Yes?
So if you say no to a school that you were accepted at, you will be allowed to go back into the lottery? Or do you?
For the selective enrollment. Right. If you say no to the magnet school, then they're going to cross you off the list and move to the next person on the list. Yes.
So, okay, at what age do you recommend that you start? Because my youngest is 6 months.
You're early.
Yeah, you're early.
I'm sorry?
I said you're early.
And number two, is there a website where you go? Because I went to Sierra West and I just walked in and I just enrolled them, and they saw this information in a piece of paper, which kind of surprised me because...
Okay.
will talk to you specifically after the session to talk about exactly what happened, because that's like a very kind of specific situation. But we will we'll talk about it.
Okay. Are we on the... Sure.
Well, the MPN School Fair, plug, is actually a really great way to get a bunch of different schools in one specific place and kind of go table to table and do some kind of investigative, you know, just talking to, it's usually a counselor or assistant principal or a principal who comes to the fair. CPS also has a school fair, although this year I heard it was kind of crazy. It was, there were a lot of people and it was a little aggressive.
it's a little crazy.
So yeah, MPN actually has two fairs. They have their regular fair and they also have a Southside fair. Fair. So
what time of the year?
Fall.
It's in the fall. It's in the fall. Great. Come on, Sarah. Come on. We're in negotiations. All right. Yes.
I'm seeing on the internet that she's going to pull up the school's report card. Is that another way of evaluating the school? And if so, because Skinner West is my neighborhood school, I was curious to know, is that a blended scorecard for them? Or is it like they're only showing the scores for the 50 program?
Yes, there is a scorecard on CPS's website. They used to come up, they used to print this big book that had all the schools in it. Now it's an online kind of PDF. And you can go through and every school in the city, there are a bunch of different criteria that they use to come up with it. It's test scores. I think there's a parent satisfaction survey. So you can kind of take a look at that and get a baseline. We tell parents all the time, just don't look at test scores because they don't really show a full story because A, it is the entire school. So if you have a neighborhood school and a gifted school combined, it's a test course for the entire school. B, you should really look at trends. Like, you know, if a school is trending up, then, you know, it could be that there have been some changes that are made, and the first time that they test is in third grade. So if changes were made a year or two ago, you aren't going to see those results for, you know, 2 to 3 years.
Good. Questions?
It's not publicized, but you can go to the school and figure out how many classrooms they have for each grade and kind of do the math yourself.
Yeah, the tricky part will be knowing, like for the magnet portion, how many siblings there are that are going to eat up those seats initially, and then based, you know, once you get through that number, how many are remaining. The school should be able to kind of give you a general idea of that. Ooh, anyone can get a hold of. I mean, the principal is always a good, you know, some principals have very open doors and you can go in and talk to them. I know our clerk feels those answers all the time. People call, where am I on the wait list? And she goes through, you know, generally we accept, you know, if you're 10 and under, you're looking pretty good. So, you know, the first person to start with is going to be the clerk. She's going to, or he or she will answer the phone. And then the principal should be able to answer those questions for you if they can, or the vice principal, assistant principal.
No, it's preschool as well.
Public, private.
It kind of rubs the gates. It's pretty much the gamut. It's it's elementary schools.
Elementary school.
So yeah, preschools and elementary schools.
Okay, Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah.
If we miss anything, let us know. Okay.
Okay.
So just to talk about the, where are we on, the process? The process. As I mentioned, that first round of letters went out towards the end of March. They generally go out around that time every year. So the internet will be buzzing and everybody's asking the question, did you get your letter yet? But those letters go out, and what happens is that they will, you know, there will be several rounds of acceptances, because what happens is some people get accepted into multiple places. They may decide to go to one or the other. Then that seat opens up, and then they go through and start calling other people. So just know that that process can go all throughout the year. It can go past the first day of school. You could get a call a week into school saying, guess what, a spot opened up. Do you want to take it? Donna gave you that CPS number. So if you're waiting, if there's a school that you're looking for that's high on your list that you haven't heard from yet, just know that you could still get a call. And if you get a call and the number starts with 553, maybe 1,000, pick up your phone immediately, because that is CPS. And they may just, if you don't answer, they don't get through to you, they may move down the list. So tell everybody whose number would, and the number that you may want to give them may be the one that you're easily accessible by, so your cell phone. Actually, so when you fill out your application,
they use the number, whatever number you put on that application is a number that they're going to call.
So if you're not at home all day, don't give them that number.
Exactly.
Yes, right here. You apply in the fall. The applications are generally due mid-December, December 15th, 16th, 17th, and then the test. Right. So if you're looking to apply for the fall prior is when you apply. And then the testing basically begins starting in October. And once your application is submitted, then they start assigning testing dates. And they test all the way. People were being tested in the beginning of March. So we were astounded those letters came out. Yeah, mid-March. We were astounded those letters came out when they did. But they tested. We had students that tested in the middle of March. Yes. The question was, is there any discretion left to the school? The official answer is no. But what happens is, and you all may have heard the stories about how at one time the principals did have what you call discretion, where they were allocated, especially in like a magnet school, they were allocated percentage of seats that they could fill outside of that lottery process. But based on some issues that came up in the high school level, I think Whitney Young was one of those names that were floating around, there were some decisions that came down, and they took that away from the principals. So in essence, the principals had no discretion or no say whatsoever. What does happen unofficially is that, like in the magnet school process, I can speak to that. A lot of times when they hit that wait list and now they're going down the wait list, there may be a little discretion there. So if your name is on that list somewhere, you may have a possibility of being able to get in. But no, it's not. The preschool programs generally are not direct feeders into the schools. They just are housed in the school. That was the situation at my school, as a matter of fact. There was a preschool program, and even those kids were there and they were taking advantage of all the stuff that was going on, the parents were getting involved, a lot of them did not get into the school because it was lottery-based, it was separate. There are there's a like our Montessori schools that have a preschool program that starts, and that is their entry point for the school, so that is a feeder into the school, but generally it's not the case. Yes.
It is going to vary by school. I mean, there's a general, I mean, their core standards are what CPS is going to now, which is supposedly a more challenging curriculum. They do more extended response. They emphasize writing more. But in terms of what you're going to get at that neighborhood school, it varies from school to school. That's really why you have to go to the schools or go to the fairs and talk to the principals and the counselors about their programs. Mm-hmm.
There are a few Montessori schools, so they'll follow that Montessori teachings, but they're not neighborhood schools, so never mind. Yes. Right.
Yeah, but that's strictly for high school. That's not on the...
Unofficially, it might help. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Okay.
So, actually, there is an end of the year citywide options program that many people don't know about. It is a kind of second round lottery process. So, what they do is they take all of the magnet schools and probably some magnet cluster schools or neighborhood schools that still have spaces available, and you can apply to that process. The process starts May 14th. You need to go to the Office of Access and Enrollment, which is www.cpsoae.org, and go on that. See, I told you.
She knows her stuff.
Go on that website, and after May 14th, if you click on options, it'll have the end of the year process.
We'll send you this information in your e-guide. So I see you frantically writing. Ready. We'll get it to you.
Yeah, it's for September.
It's for September.
And also in our e-guide, we have a list of charter schools that are still accepting applicants across the city. So that's another option if you didn't gain admission to any of the schools that you apply to.
And we left charters out when we did our descriptions of schools, so and they're kind of their own animal, but Donna loves charter schools, so I should let her tell you.
Really?
Joking. But you know, they have their own kind of processes, so you kind of have to go to each charter school and find out A, what their curriculum is, B, what their application and enrollment process is. Like Donna said, some of them are rolling, some of them may mirror CPS, but you apply to the charter schools directly. So you don't, yes.
It's lottery based.
Lottery based.
No.
No.
None of the charter schools test. Sorta. That's why she said I love them so much.
It's a gray line.
They are kind of a gray line. Some of them, you know, go by the CPS calendar and they go by CPS guidelines. Some of them do not at all. Some of them don't even give the ISAT, you know, so it varies school by school. So you have to almost treat it like a private school in terms of each one has their own curriculum, has their own guidelines, their own process, and you have to kind of investigate each one independently. Yeah, they're not. Well, there are a couple of them. No.
A little different, yeah. There are a lot of, you know, and you can take them for what they're worth, but, you know, if you go online, great schools, or there, you know, there's CPS Obsessed, and you go, where people talk about different schools. Now, again, one person's experience isn't necessarily everyone's experience, but there are ways to find out about different schools. And a lot of times that's what you have to do. It's talking to people and finding out who's there, going online, doing kind of those type of investigative steps, because sometimes that information isn't readily available.
What was the first unit of CPS Obsessed that was
greatschools.org, O-R-G. They kind of have a rating system or grading system. Yes.
If you apply for the lottery.
Yeah. So if I'm gonna wait list.
Okay.
Oh, if you enroll.
Technically, yes. Once your child can only be enrolled at one CPS school, so technically you're out of the running. Now, are the schools gonna go in a system and check to see if your child is enrolled in another school? Maybe. I mean, you're kind of taking a chance, but the official answer is you're out of the process at that point.
What about when September comes around and school starts and you have to be in school, but you're waiting on the wait list, so you can still be called even after September? So
you can.
They're in the neighborhood school.
That's what I'm saying. Technically, right. Technically, yeah. No, but if they're looking to fill seats in a selective enrollment school, then they're going to still call people because people will take their child out and put them in a selective enrollment school, especially, and some magnet schools if a spot becomes available.
So when do you recommend enrolling in a magnet school if you haven't heard from
them?
You can wait till
they're
ready.
Just saying. I wouldn't wait that soon, but it is your neighborhood school, so you do, it's a guarantee. Guaranteed that seat. So I would wait as long as possible. I wouldn't maybe give yourself a few weeks before school starts, but you know, if you're holding out for some other things, you can do that and still know that you'll have that space there. But you know, and as a, thinking from the school's perspective, you want to make sure that they have what they need for your child too. So if they know you're coming, they can best prepare. So
August.
Use that gauge. Yeah. A couple weeks before. Yes. It's 20 separate. So the A school A, they're going to pull names for there. If your name's in for school B, it's the same thing. So each school has it's a lottery for each school. Yes?
Once you're at a magnet school in that lottery, does your name come out of the lottery? Or can you leapfrog from school to school?
They do all of those pulls at once. So you're going to get that letter that says you got in here, you didn't, but then you've been waitlisted. So what happens is you could say, okay, we got accepted into Murray Language Academy. It's where my kids go. And you don't necessarily have to enroll. You know that you've been accepted. Now, they may call and say, are you going to come? And you're going to enroll? And you can say, yeah, I'll be there in a couple. Yeah, I'll be there and kind of stall time. But what's happening is these schools are trying to figure out their seats. And so other schools may call and say, you were number 10 on the wait list. Now we've got a spot for you. So as Donna said, you know, that you until you go and take the birth certificate and all that stuff and go in, you're still kind of in the running there. Once you do that, you're technically out of it, but there's still chances that you could get calls because the schools are just going down this list and your name is number 2 and they haven't gone back into the system to see if you've enrolled anywhere else. And so you take your chances. To enroll, well, the schools are going
to
call you and they're going to say, could you please come in? Because they're trying to firm that up as soon as possible. I don't think there's a hard, steadfast deadline. Right, it's as soon as they...
Well, school by school. We had a parent who called and said that, their second or third choice called and said, hey, you have to come in by Friday and enroll your child. And he said, well, can you dance around that a little bit? You're out of town, you know. Just because they're holding out for another school. But it's kind of based school by school. Again, like Jerry said, they're trying to get their numbers. They're trying to, you know, determine if people are actually going to come or if they're just playing a game like everybody else. So the the appeals process. So there is an appeals process for CPS, and that is if you feel as though there was an error in your application and acceptance process. You know, the appeal can't be, I didn't get into the school I wanted to get into. all of the schools that were on my magnet list are not listed, or I don't even know what, you know, some of the, but it has to be like a technicality that occurred in your application process. And again, you can write a letter to CPS and let them know that that you have there's a discrepancy in your application process. And for this upcoming year, that will be open from April 30th through May 11th. It's a very small window that you can actually appeal the decision. So the future of CPS, we're just going to do kind of a quick, you know, summary of some of the changes that are coming up for next year.
A lot of these have been making the news.
Yes. So changes to the calendar. 10 additional days of student attendance will be added for next year. So the total number of days the students will be in school will be 180.
So yay, we no longer hold the They are taking out. So traditionally, we've had. Oh, sorry. We've had Pulaski Day in March was a holiday. Columbus Day. So they're taking report card days. So report card days are typically non-attendance days. Now they are making them half days, basically. Because what would happen is you would have your report card pickup and you'd have teacher conferences. So what they're doing now is making them half days, and the teacher conferences take place in the afternoon. They're going to give about a five and a half hour window. Like I said, the holidays, so Columbus Day, Pulaski Day, those days are no longer going to be holidays. They want the schools to take the opportunity to teach your children about Columbus and Pulaski and use that as an educational opportunity. Yes, exactly.
Because to increase the number of days, you know, Chicago was the shortest attendance time period for, I think,
the country.
So, you know, they've gotten a lot of flack for that, and so they're trying to figure out ways to increase the instructional time and adding days. I mean, honestly, CPS had like 2 days off a month. It was kind of ridiculous. Every time you turned around, they had a day off. So, I'm sorry. We'll get to that in a second. And that, so the next part of that is a longer school day. So students will receive an additional 52 minutes of time every day. So 6 of those hours will be instruction, and 45 minutes of that time will be for recess and lunch. Students will be in the school for 7 hours each day, and teachers will be in the school for 7 hours and 40 minutes. There's a whole lot of buzz going back and forth about what the start times are going to be. They have not officially publicized what the new start times are going to be. As some of you probably know, they're in the middle of contract negotiations with the teachers union. So we kind of feel like that might be something that they're going to come up with after that contract is solidified. So if you hear the rumors, they're just rumors. Nobody really knows. But it will be a 7-hour day. I'm sorry?
It varies by school. So there's some schools that start as early as 7:30 and they get out at what, 1:20? Some schools start, our school starts at 8:45 and gets out at 2:30. But overall, the school day is going to increase by about 75 minutes. So there'll be that extra time added onto the day.
So I would assume it. Part of it would be at the beginning, and part of it would be at the end. So you'll probably get earlier start times and later end times.
And there's a lot of back and forth about how those minutes are going to be used, what's going to take place, and that's a lot of the negotiating that's going on. And you know, there's a recent letter that Broussard sent out to the families and CPS talking about they're going to try and let the principals have more say so of what is going to take place in the school. So we'll see how that goes, but it's the schools are trying to come up with their plans now. But again, they just changed the time from 7.5 to 7 hours. So you know, it's still kind of in flux. Yes.
It varies school by school. Generally, a school will, if they don't have a program in house, there are park districts that partner with the schools where they provide busing to the after-school program, but it It really depends. There are some schools, like there's one, there's I can think of a couple that have that 7:30 start time and the 1:20 end time that doesn't have after school. So again, that's kind of why you really need to go to the schools and kind of ask those questions.
On the CPS website, you can actually pull up each school, and it'll show you for this year, not for next year,
right,
the current start and time.
Right.
And it says whether there's before and after school stuff. But you have to do it.
And I would take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because that's information that's not always accurate.
Right. And that there are some program, you know, sometimes programs don't kick in right away because of funding. So you'll see they may have some specialized after-school programs, but they don't start until October or November. So, and they end early. They'll end in March when the funding runs out. So, you know, it's not a surefire way if you're looking for child care as opposed to extracurricular things for your child. So you have to really, excuse me, explore those a little bit deeper. Yes. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
What funding? No, yeah. You know, long story short, it's such a wide range of funding because there's funding that's allocated to schools based on the fact that maybe they're in a low-income area that have a high percentage of students who require, I guess, what they call the free lunch program, so then they get federal funding. So if you don't meet that criteria, then you only get a certain amount of funding that's allocated from you to you by CPS. And so a lot of schools then have to find outside sources or ways to fund their programs by obtaining grants or corporate donations. But every school is different. You know, some schools have friends of groups that help to support them and provide extra funding for programming, and sometimes they even pay for teachers or teachers' aides. PTOs that do fundraising or funding. There are some schools that have very strong partnerships with corporations or companies that provide, you know, they pay for their gym or their, you know, there's such a wide range of them. You really have to kind of go into that school and see what's going on. There's no clear-cut, even keel way of distributing the money. Absolutely. Yeah, believe me, if you're in a school, you're going to be part of raising. You're going to be asked to help out in some way.
So kind of moving on to teacher evaluations, this year there's a new teacher evaluation system called REACH that they are using. This has been the first update to the teacher evaluation system since the 1970s. And they plan to phase it in over the next 2 years. But basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to incorporate student evaluations, I mean student performance, into a teacher's overall rating. So right now, it's just based on the teacher practice. In the first year, it's going to be 75% teacher practice and 25% student growth. So there's a MAP test that students take at the beginning. I think they take it four times a year? Four times a year. So they'll look at that trend over that year and determine how well a teacher is doing based on the student's performance. Their goal is to have it be 50% teacher practice, which is like kind of teacher observation, 40% student growth, and 10% student feedback, and that's at grades 4 and up. So that's just kind of a tidbit of new information. So, I mean, you know, there are pros and cons to you know, having students' performance be an evaluation tool for teachers, and that's also part of what the teachers' union is negotiating with CPS. But it's, you know, it's kind of, we'll see how that all plays out starting this year. It's like an evaluation form, basically. Grades 4 and up. full-day kindergarten, that's, you know, a really hot topic. This past year, CPS said they spent $15 million to add 6,000 full-time spots. We haven't really seen the results of that, if they actually did or not add those spots. In your e-guide, we have a list of all of the full-time kindergarten programs in the city that are non-selective enrollment. So all of your neighborhood, your magnet schools that have full-time kindergarten spots there.
So what can you do? We've talked about this a little bit. I'll get you. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. What is a full-day kindergarten? A full-day kindergarten is just that. It's a program that where the student kindergarten students go from the first beginning of school to the end, just like the upper grade kids. There are some half-day programs where the students only go for half day, so they'll start in the morning and then maybe they'll end midday. So that's the difference. Either you're going to have a full or a half-day kindergarten program.
And we don't really know what that's going to look like next year for with the longer school day. And that's part of the debate right now is, you know, is a kindergartner ready for a seven-hour day?
They're just coming off of naps. You know, it's like they're exactly. going to need some special services. Yes. That's okay.
First grade.
That's not a silly question.
It isn't a silly question, actually.
Yeah.
And that's why kindergarten funding always is questionable, because it's not a requirement in the state of Illinois. So, you know, you can keep your child home and take them on when they turn six on the first day, and that's what you're required to do. No, they're still in negotiations.
Ongoing. So what can you do? We talked about getting involved. There's a lot of grassroots community organizations. You may have heard of Raise Your Hand. You may have heard of Stand for Children. There's ways that you can, as a parent, get involved in this process and making sure that, you know, this day and this whole, these changes really are best for the child and best for your family. So those are ways that you write letters, you can get involved, lots of information. If you want to learn more, you can go, like we said, go to the school, knock on the door, talk to the principal, talk to the PTO person, talk to the parents on the playground, find out what's going on in that school. Talk to people in the community. You'll get a lot of information just by kind of standing, asking people, how do you feel about this? What, you know, what's this experience like for you and your family? having a hard time tonight. But, yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways, lots of information you can get. You can give us a call. We can help you out, too. We love to help parents navigate through that process. That's what we do. That's our purpose here, to really help
also
you out.
The local school council. Each school has a local school council, and those meetings are open. You can go to your local school council meeting to find out what's going on at the school.
Right. And quite honestly, you know, we're all sort of, no matter where you send your child, there's going to be a school in your neighborhood. And good schools in your neighborhood are good for everybody. They're good for your real estate property. They're just good for the community. So you can also get involved in those schools and not necessarily have your child there by joining your local school council. They do offer spots for community people who just want to get involved and help out in their neighborhood. So it's a way to sort of also find out about your school, but get involved. Very good point. Another question?
No, it's a part of the program. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The question was, are all of the magnet and selective enrollment school kindergarten programs full day, or are some of them half?
All of the selective enrollment programs are full day. Magnet,
I'm not sure.
We'll
have to check
that.
Into that. Make a note.
Yeah. You guys have surveys on your seat. If you would, please fill them out. You also have a Canary interest card. If you're interested in learning more about our student services, as well as our private parent sessions that we do, you can fill that out and give it back to us. But it's now open for any additional questions. You guys ask a lot of questions during our presentation. But if there are any other questions, you can feel free.
Yes.
It varies from school to, that process is even more individualized by school. You apply directly to the school. The school determines who gets in, and it's not a feeder to that particular school.
Sometimes it's the teacher that runs the program. They kind of pick and, yeah, they select the students that come in. Sometimes they're steadfast, sometimes it's on need, it depends. The hard line is they'll tell you it's not based on need, it's just sort of random, but I don't think so. Yeah.
It's totally different.
Totally different.
It's school based.
Right. So there's a, you have these preschool for all programs, which are like these half day or two, and come half day, like 2 hour programs. And you would apply directly to, a lot of the schools accept the application. So if it's housed in the school, you would apply directly to that school for that program during their enrollment time. And then they somehow have a process, and I don't know what it is, of pick, but they pick. First priority.
Yeah. I don't know.
Are you talking for preschool?
For preschool.
Right, preschool is a separate, preschool is a whole separate process. So there's no testing and all that. You're just applying in, and they will notify you. They may send you a letter. They may give you a call and say you've been accepted. And some of the programs, even though they do say, and she said it was need-based, but I will tell you that it's not necessarily, that's not necessarily the straight rule across the board.
In terms of, for our parent services, yes. I mean, since there's really no process for the children, we don't really do like a student program for them. Yeah, they're little. They're babies. Yes,
yes,
for the parents, absolutely.
Help the parents. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because preschool is it's nice to have, right? So it's not funded, it's not required. So they provide it, but they provide it for a charge. Now there are some programs that are tuition free. There's a preschool for all program, and there's some others, but that is they're short abbreviated programs. If you're looking for your child to have a full day at experience, and maybe it's a child care type thing also, you're not necessarily, you're going to have to pay for that for the program. Yes.
Can you apply to any preschool, or do you go to?
You can apply to any preschool.
Depends. My daughter goes to a gifted school, and there was a child who transferred in mid-year. I was pretty surprised about it.
Yeah.
I would assume so, since she kind of showed up.
Yeah.
But generally, if it's one or two spots, I don't know if they necessarily fill them. If they have a low enrollment in the class, they might.
Yeah.
It kind of depends on the
And I think they try to, they hesitate to do it beyond, you know, that first part of the year, because then you're really, I think you may be, it's tough on the child to come in so far into the year. But I have seen that happen at my school also. Yes.
So there is never grade school, high school, accelerated program. You just get in where you get in.
Grade school, high school,
accelerated. Like, I grew up in the summer, so you were regular, or they had like gifted stuff. Yeah. But this is like you get in, everybody does the same thing. If your kid's bored, too bad.
You can apply every year. So, like, if you find that your child is bored at the school they go to, you can apply and have your child tested in third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade to go into one of these selective enrollment schools.
There are some schools that do differentiated learning. There's some schools who will pull your child. You know, in our school, there are children in kindergarten who are reading at a third grade level. They pull them out for reading they go read with second and third grade classes. So they do, some schools do offer this to be able, but it's a magnet school, so they don't have to. It's not, but they do it because they know that they want to challenge children and keep these children in the school as well. There are some schools that have gifted programs within them. They're not necessarily a gifted school, but they do offer some, and maybe they're teaching a half grade ahead or a little bit accelerated. So there are some options in some schools, but again, you have to ask about it. But I grew up in, you know, I'm not from here either. I grew up in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, and just like that, I went to a school, and if, you know, you needed this, you went right, you went left. It was all in the same building. You didn't have to have all of these separate services, but Chicago's set up a little bit differently. In the red back there, yeah. When you're in kindergarten?
Yeah, what should we be preparing now?
You should have them come to our prep classes. like I said, it's the classical test is a skills-based test. So your typical kindergarten-type skills, beginning sounds, ending sounds. I'm sorry? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because they're testing, I mean, if you think about it, they'll be in a classical school, if they go into kindergarten, they'll be working at a first grade level.
Right.
So they're testing kindergarten skills. At a regional gifted center, they'll be working at a second grade level. So they're testing first and second grade skills. So those are the kind of things that they're looking for on the test.
They take your child, since it's so hard, they take your child away in the room, and so you don't see anything.
Yeah. No. And good luck at finding out what they did behind the curtain, because you'll get a different answer from every single child. Oh.
Yeah, you're saying the things that we should be preparing our child for, like even enrolling them in your 12-week program, don't you want us to have them prepared even for that? It doesn't seem to me like 12 weeks is going to get them ready.
It's a team effort.
It seems like it should be a lifetime
learning. It is. And, you know, what we tell parents is, like for the IQ test, it is a lot of experiences that the children have had. So talking to your child like they're an adult and not kind of dumbing down your answers when they ask you something, you'd be amazed at what, you know, children can, you know, retain and comprehend. You know, even like at Sam's Club, like the kindergarten and first grade workbooks, kind of starting and kind of seeing what your child might know. And, you know, those type of things. There are lots of online resources. If you look up kindergarten curriculum or first grade curriculum, those are the type of skills that they're looking for to test for the classical test, at least. Yeah, you know, they've always said that there is no reading on the test, and there is reading on the test.
Yes.
We do know that.
Right. And they'll tell you for the gifted, oh, they don't need to know how to read, but guess what? By October 1st,
they're going to do a book report.
They need to read.
Like, yeah, seriously, they're doing book reports like the, you know, the first month in. So if they don't know how to read when they take the test, you better work on that before they get started. Huh? Kindergarten, yeah.
I mean, they're not typing them, but
yeah.
They need to know how to read at 4, not at 5.
Right.
So to me, that speaks to the value of having your kid in kindergarten, because if you're trying to get kids into, you know, a gifted program in first grade, they got no shot if they just couldn't
competitive.
Yeah, it's pretty competitive.
Yes. Okay. Let's see. We have a.
The applications process usually starts the end of October and goes through mid-December for the following year. Sure.
Charter schools are interesting because they tend to have, they build their own curriculum, and they usually have some sort of philosophy that they build it around. There are, you know, there's some all-girls charter schools. I mean, it's just, there's a variety of them, and it's hard. You can't even give it a blanket, you know, this is what they do. Magnet schools, you know, there are, they have these specializations, so a lot of them, their curriculum are built around these specializations that they have. So, for instance, if you have a language academy, they build a lot of their curriculum around exposing these children to the languages. They're K through 8, they're starting in kindergarten, they're going to language at least 3 days a week. They're integrating that language into their other subjects and other aspects of the school. So it really depends on, you know, the focus of that school. And the charters a lot of times have those focuses as well. We had a little order here. Who was next? Okay. Oh, goodness. Sure. So basically what we do, we do a few things. We work with parents to help you understand all these questions and more. We really help you hone in on that process, understand it, walk you through the application process, preparing your child for the testing process, what happens when you get in or you didn't get in, all of these things. We help you with that. We also have what we call our student based programs where we have a 12-week student what we call prep session where we work in the fall leading up to those tests. 4-year-olds. Those would be those students who are 4 years old by September 1st of the year, because they would be the students who would be going to kindergarten the following fall.
Can I ask a quick question about the age of parents?
Sure. No, my child's birthday is September 3rd, so we missed that cutoff by 2 days, and they weren't budging. So, yeah, it's pretty steadfast. Private schools may be willing to do it, but there were a lot of private schools who were also pretty steadfast on that also.
And you have to make that commitment. So if you have your child enrolled in a private school, you say for kindergarten, and you want them to go to first grade, in first grade, CPS is going to put them in the grade that they belong in. Whether that's repeating kindergarten again or skipping kindergarten for some kids, for some parents who, you know, kind of hold their kids back, your child will skip kindergarten and start off in first grade if that's the age that they're supposed to be.
Do they charge tuition at charter schools?
No. Okay, I'm not pointing.
At the same time, you get your results of what school you got into.
Yeah, it's very different from other states.
Yeah.
Here.
It varies by school.
Yeah, you'd have to contact the school directly. I'm sorry? Who conducts the testing? CPS contracts with, it's usually UIC.
It's IIT.
IIT, got the wrong.
They use grad psychology grad students to actually perform the test. And the testing is done at IIT.
Yes. Oh, acceptance.
We do know, like, this last year, there were, I mean, and that's, this is not a hard fact, so there were around 3,000 applicants for 300 spots, just to kind of give you an idea, for kindergarten. I'm sorry,
for
selective enrollment schools, there were around 300 applicants and
3,000 applicants.
3,000, sorry, for 300 spots that were open.
Could you say for the gifted selective enrollment,
No. No. You can test in at any year if there are available seats for you. Yeah. Yes. You have to test in. Mm-hmm. You're right across the street, yeah. Yes. You. Yes.
Okay, and then it goes, and then once you're in the school for kindergarten, you stay.
Right. That's,
they don't need to retest for first grade.
No.
Right.
If there are some schools that their entry point is first grade, they don't have kindergarten.
Okay.
But for those schools, your child would be testing in kindergarten to go into first grade.
First grade. Any more questions? Oh, what?
Is your wait list more than high school programs? What are the chances of getting
No,
that's not true.
I talked about that earlier. You won't get a waitlist number for those schools. It really just kind of depends on a combination of the score that your child received and kind of where they fall in terms of tier and what the needs are. So it's hard to say. No, it won't increase your chances.
No, but will it, like if I apply to four truck enrollment schools, are they going to place, if you get the score regardless?
You rank them in order of your preference.
Priority.
So they go by, you know, your first school if there's a spot there.
Oh. All right, well, I'm going to interject because we could probably go all night.
Okay.
So,
oh, yeah,
it's
one
more.
Time
is it? Wow.
I'll wait till later. Okay. Only because I just want to make sure we guys, chance to peanuts out of here. So, just to wrap up a couple things, Donna and Barry, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I listen to you guys all the time. And we'll be emailing all of you their e-guides, so you'll get a lot of their information, their contact information, and we'll contact you about that. Just a couple quick follow ups I want to mention. We have a huge online silent auction. Hopefully, everyone can email about it, maybe. The preview week is open right now. Bidding will start May 1st through 6th, and Donna and Barry generously donated basically a small. So we're going to June 8th, and it's going to be basically like 10 people in a class. It'll be a two-hour class to kind of go through the whole kind of school process and ask all of your in-depth questions. So please bid on those. They would love it. It's great fundraising for them. Yeah, and there's, I think it's nearly $60,000 in family-related items in the auction. So it's literally classes, dentists, like you can really get an amazing deal on tons and tons of great stuff. So please help support NPM. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. The auction is open to the public, so share with anyone who lives in Chicago would benefit from restaurants, massages, haircuts, literally everything. So just again, those dates for the school fairs, I know it's a far way off, but it's good to pencil them in, is September 22nd, we are planning the Southside Fair, probably in Hyde Park, and then Saturday, October 13th, is our kind of citywide fair, and that'll be at Rosinger neighborhood. And I also recommend visiting the discussion forum. Hopefully most of you use it normally. But you can search for a school. I mean, and like Donna and Jerry said, take it with a grain of salt, because some people have very strong opinions that aren't based on anything that will relate to your experience. But it's a really interesting way to just get a really broad perspective of stuff, and especially not just like right now, but over the last few years, of what parents have said or experienced about a given school. So it's a nice way to do a little research, you know, when it's 10 o'clock at night and this is keeping you up. Try to dig in and see. Any other quick questions? I'm sorry, what?
The parent discussion.
The NPM discussion forum. So if you go to the NPM site and go to discuss, you can really search on anything. But and we get some incredible number of hits now. We're probably at like 600,000 page views a month. So there's so many members sharing so much information. It's really kind of a gold mine of information. You can look up anything. But I definitely suggest the school. schools, we also have our school directory. You can do an online search for a given school and pull up kind of like a basic, it's not the full scorecard, but it's enough information to kind of get you started about where the school is, what it, you know, its focus is, and then you can download the PDF school directory. So in case you're not online and you're not, you know, want to dig through it. So thank you so much. Thanks to Bubbles for hosting us. We really appreciate it. Thank you, Chip, for the podcast. Thanks, everybody. All right.